let's get into politics at 6 minutes past 11. Our commentators today are Matthew Hooton and Neil Jones. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Matthew's an Auckland-based public relations consultant and lobbyist, also a PhD student. Neil was Chief of Staff to Labor leader Jacinda Ardern, prior to that Chief of Staff to Andrew Little, Director of Capital Government Relations. Right, lots to work through. A shift of levels today, some very tough tests and decisions ahead from the government. And we had in the previous week or so certainly seen growing scrutiny on the length and stringency of lockdown level 4, now level 3. How do each of you see how this is tracking for the government and what's ahead? Matthew, do you want to go first?
Well, the government will be absolutely thrilled with how the numbers have gone. The Prime Minister's been applauded in the international media for having eliminated the virus. Interesting, of course, Michael Baker on Morning Report said it's not quite clear what that word means. But anyway, we certainly, along with Australia, have very, very low rates of this infection now, and people can feel very pleased about the way it's happened. And on top of that, even in countries where things are not going so well, such as the United Kingdom, as long as the leader isn't a complete idiot, like in the United States, incumbents are doing very, very well. I see the British Conservative Party is on 50% at the moment, and I assume the New Zealand Labour Party is roughly on 50% as well.
What, though, of what happens now? Because there's been this project, a national project, if you like. Just listening to that news, more redundancies, steel and tube. We have seen the unemployment figures, and we'll come to them in a minute, rise, some 30,000 more job seekers in the latest report. Construction going back to work today, but what do you see as the critical next stage of the government both making decisions and communicating them? Matthew first, and then I'll come to you, Neil, for your
I think the key thing is the decision about what to do with further stimulus spending, in particular the wage subsidy scheme, which I think comes to an end in early to mid-June. And obviously, especially if the Trans-Tasman border gets reopened soon, which will at least allow the tourism industry to have access to its largest market, you know, things will not be as horrific economically as some of those early projections, but they're still going to be very, very bad, worse than 1991 and closer to the Great Depression. So the government's going to have to decide what to do in order to provide support. As I understand it, there's three broad options that ministers are considering. One is to extend that wage subsidy scheme. That is the downside, as time goes on, of directing taxpayers' cash, borrowed taxpayers' cash, to businesses which probably are doomed anyway. Or they could extend the dole in some way, but that is the problem of welfare dependency, so that leaves something like a universal basic income. And I understand that there are forces within the government who are keen to pursue that option.
We'll come back to those specifics in a moment. Neil, what's your take on where they're at and what has to happen now?
Well, I mean, just going back to the issue around scrutiny over length and stringency, I would just say there are some legitimate criticisms, and by nature, these things are arbitrary and probably unfair in many cases, and hopefully the government will continue to work through those cases they did in level 4, but that was always going to be the case. And I think, you know, we are seeing the irony now of the fact that this is working makes a lot of the restrictions look too harsh in retrospect. So we get these cries of overreaction from people who I think would have been literally screaming murder if Jacinda Ardern had taken a less restrictive approach and the virus had got out of control. So, I mean, I think by and large, it has been a success. The recent Colmar Brunton poll showed 87% support for the government's course of action, and you know, as Matthew points out, the economic scenario was looking a bit better. I mean, those Treasury scenarios that were released showed no good outcomes, but this is the best outcome for the economy long term if we can keep it under control. In terms of where we go from here, I think, I mean, the government's laid out a three-step plan, which is respond, rebuild, recover. And I think we'll be in that respond situation for a while. There is obviously wage subsidy notwithstanding, I mean, that's been a big success. There's 1.6 million New Zealanders whose jobs are being supported by that. But I mean, there are other issues that businesses are facing. You've got businesses in hospitality and retail, for example, who are now facing 5 weeks, some 7 weeks of severely restricted or no trade at all. So I think there is going to be a need for the government to continue to be agile and respond quickly as businesses look like they're going to teeter over. We've also got the budget coming up in a few weeks as well. But I would expect that we'll be in recovery for a while before we move on to the next stage of rebuilding and getting that construction pipeline going.
All right, let's look at some of what they're up against. And I was watching Cameron Bagri on Q&A talking about the country's economic turnover, if you like, all its activities. All the activities of all organisations and companies is somewhere in the region of about $700 billion a year. So even at 80% activity, that is a massive hit each and every month. And he was also talking about the job seeker numbers, which I think the April 17th numbers, actually the 30,000 goes back to those, dates back to the last review in February. He talked about unemployment likely already at 6.7% and is projecting 10% unemployment. And the final premise for this, Thomas Coughlin's excellent piece on Stuff, the job losses, you may see some of the heaviest impact coming when that wage subsidy runs out. Something may replace it, but businesses will be making very hard calls around their viability around that time. Are they geared up sufficiently, both of you? Are they geared up for the harshness of this fully taking effect in a way that some people in this country will never have experienced? And for many others, it's a distant memory.
Well, to a certain extent, the government's going to need, and New Zealanders and the opposition and everybody is going to have to accept the harshness of this. There are some businesses which simply will never be viable again. And we can point to some of them. The kayaking business in Te Anau, I'm sorry if they're listening, but they will know they're in terrible trouble. And what needs to happen is a massive allocation of resources as a result of this, this disaster, this global economic disaster and health disaster. The last time there was a massive allocation of resources, reallocation of resources in New Zealand was in that 1980s and 1990s, and about a quarter of people experienced unemployment in that time. And you can look at that two ways. You can say, wasn't that terrible that a quarter of people experienced unemployment? But you could also say it's quite remarkable that in the space of 4 or 5 years, a quarter of the economy reallocated. And something like that is going to have to happen again. And what the government needs to focus on is facilitating it, not holding it up. For political reasons, I'm sure they're going to want to extend the wage subsidy scheme, for cynical political reasons, for 3 months out to after the election. And no doubt the political advisers will be urging that, because it will mean that unemployment will appear not to have struck too badly by the election date. But the economists will be saying, hang on, the sooner that we get that allocation and reallocation of resources, including labour, underway, and get training programs in and accept that a huge proportion of the, a huge minority of the population is going to have to do different things or slightly different things, that's going to be the better in the long term. But, the politics are awful, of course.
Neil?
I think to the extent that there will be a reallocation of resources, which is a very technical way of putting people's lives being ruined at a great scale, I would think the government should ensure that there is adequate and generous social support. I think the memory of Rogenomics is very raw, and regardless of what you think about the outcome of it, the process through which it happened was devastating to people's lives and communities, and in many ways we've never recovered from it. So I think the government has to be very generous in supporting people through that process of change. There will have to be a realignment of the economy. There are some sectors that we probably can't be as reliant on tourism and international education as we have been. I think we also have to look at, for example, whether selling houses to each other is a good way to run an economy. So there will have to be a realignment of the economy. I think what we go to is not just a matter of sort of holding our hands in the air and seeing what happens. I think, Graham Robertson has referred to the first Labor government as an inspiration. And I think, he's very aware that as well as looking backwards, he needs to look forward. So sort of think about what sort of country do we want to be in the decades to come? Because those are decisions he's going to be making in the coming months. And
right.
I think that...
Oh, no, you mustn't do that.
What can I just say, though? It does mean things like, you know, climate change, so zero emissions, you know, being digitally connected, a more equal society. These are the sort of things he needs to be thinking about now, because those are the decisions he's making.
Well, that's the challenge he has, to look medium term and also to the short term pain, because the short term pain is imminent. And just talking even to the construction industry again this morning, there will be literally weeks to determine whether some of those businesses survive or not. I want to come back to what Matthew was talking about by means of support packages, because now we're talking about the budget immediately upon us. I've seen some talk about whether you extend that wage subsidy, increasingly economists saying replace it with something else. And we certainly know one economist, Dr. Richard Mead, principal economist at Cognitas Economic Insight, also a senior fellow in economics at Auckland University of Technology, has been talking about having the equivalent of a student loan scheme for businesses. You have skin in the game, you have to pay it back. It would be easier to obtain it, less bureaucracy than it would be trying to go through your bank. I'm seeing other economists talking about a similar thing. So instead of a straight grant, you have to decide whether your business is viable and therefore whether you sign up to a direct government loan scheme. You're also talking about things like the UBI coming up for a different way of dealing with such a scale of job losses. It has its own controversies. Could we delve a little bit more into how the government could look at supporting businesses now in this budget and supporting those losing their jobs now? Matt, do you want to start?
Okay, well, with the wage subsidy scheme, I think everybody agrees with it. It was based, but on a much larger scale, obviously, of what was done after the Christchurch and Kaikoura earthquakes. And basically it said to the business community, it's now going to be illegal for you to operate. That isn't your fault. Let's try and hold as many businesses together as possible so that they continue to exist in 3 months' time and they can be the platform for recovery. And it was absolutely the right thing to do. Nobody could criticise that. But looking ahead, businesses are going to be reopening. You mentioned the construction industry, some elements of it. There's going to be offices opening. You know, even at a stretch in a few months' time, hopefully some Australian tourism. Queenstown could get some Australian skiers for the winter, which would be helpful. And those things will start happening. And at a certain point, you have to transition away from supporting businesses to supporting people. Because if you support businesses, over time, you will increasingly be supporting businesses with borrowed money, as I said, which you shouldn't be supporting. Businesses go broke all the time. Business ideas fail all the time. There's going to be more than usual, and that has to be allowed to happen. So then you have to look at the type of measures which help people. Now, one of the things the government, being a Labor government, would probably want to do, but I think it would be a mistake, is to say, well, look, here's an industry that we know is going to fail because the government's all seeing. We know for sure that this industry is going to fail. So therefore, we think the workers in that industry should be retrained for this different industry. Now, the chances of that being accurate are extremely low. With no disrespect to Grant Robertson or the Treasury officials, it's just extremely unlikely that they will get that right. And so, therefore, that's where I say you should move to something like a UBI and think of the kayaking firm in Tiānao. What it would mean is the people do lose their jobs. That is correct. But there's no stand down. They move on to the UBI. And then when they do get a job, or when new work emerges in their community that we can't predict what it will be, they can take that work without facing enormous abatement issues. And that's the benefit of it. But the government has to weigh all this up, but I hope they don't think they're omniscient and they're going to have, and that Grant Robertson thinks he has some insight into where the world economy will be in 5 or 10 years' time, because that's lunacy.
Coming to you, Neil, but the challenge of the UBI, of course, is A, its cost, and I know we're spending a lot at the moment, but B, it's not targeted. And as you've said in your article on Friday on The Herald, Graham Hart gets it, which is one of the challenges with it. Your pick up, Neil, on what the options are.
Yeah, I agree with Matthew to the extent that the government cannot forever subsidise businesses that are no longer viable. And so there will come a point where some businesses will fail. I think the key thing is to make sure that in the medium term, businesses that are otherwise viable are supported through, but that has to be very focused and targeted. And that I think as well, as Matthew points out, that the money goes to people. So I think we do need to be more generous in terms of retraining. So making sure that people can afford, if the business they're working for goes under, they can continue to maintain some level of basic decent life, retraining into a new role. And also generous welfare support. I think, you know, the point about UBI, this is a big philosophical discussion we could spend an hour on, but the key point is that welfare needs to be livable and it needs to be not punitive, so that people can actually move in and out of the workforce, which is happening increasingly anyway in our economy, but in this current crisis we will see more of it, and we need to remove some of those punitive sanctions that actually discourage people from being able to continue their life and get back on their feet. As for UBI, it is incredibly expensive, and I think, and very untargeted, and I think it could work potentially as part of a very fundamental reform of the tax system, but it's not something, if you did it overnight and just said we're going to give everyone a few hundred bucks a week, the support it provided for people who needed it would be inadequate, and it would provide support for people who don't need it. So it would be a very poor use of money at this time. So I think that's a much, much bigger, much more long-term issue, UBI.
Stand-downs and abatements, as Matthew rightly points out, is the problem if you've lost your job, you're picking up some work for this week, you're trying something out, you've got a contract for 3 months. This is going to be realities for people with the best of intentions whose, solid, steady jobs have been whipped away from them. And it's equally complex and difficult, isn't it, Neil, to just deal with abatements and stand down periods overnight?
I wouldn't think so. I think in this moment of crisis, we could just remove them. I mean, we managed with the wage subsidy in this moment of crisis to just say, hey, apply. Now, I'm not saying it should necessarily be that easy to get government welfare, but I think we could be a lot easier than we have been. So as for abatements, I mean, again, these things can be fixed relatively quickly in the short term, and we can look at longer term what that looks like. I just think at a time like this, we should not be putting in barriers to people getting the support they need. And I think there's going to be another problem, which is that if you look at, you know, people are going to be losing their jobs, and they're going to have rental payments they owe, they're going to have mortgages they owe, these supports aren't going to last forever that are currently there. How do we? I mean, if I suddenly tomorrow had no job, I couldn't afford to service my mortgage on a benefit. I can't think of a flat in Wellington that would be available for the benefit. What you get in the benefit? There's going to be a huge problem there, I think, with what's happened to our housing market and the low levels of benefits that the government's going to have to grapple with as well.
Okay, let's look at some other matters that are about, gentlemen. It was Paul Goldsmith who was doing some of the agitating, particularly on behalf of the small to medium enterprises last week. We heard that we heard some of the missteps that Labor MPs made with comments. But the misstep that everyone focused on was Simon Bridges, and particularly his tone. It was interesting hearing Paul Goldsmith, had him on the show last week. I heard him speaking up on behalf of small to medium enterprises. Michael Woodhouse on This Morning, National's health spokesman, again, actually saying, I want this to work, but I have to question whether it is working. That's the sort of tone. What's going on with Simon Bridges' ability to hit it, Matthew?
Well, it's turned out he doesn't have this ability to read the room, or whatever the trendy phrase for it is at the moment. People used to talk about the X factor. He just simply doesn't have it. He does not, at this time, have the support of the majority of the National Party caucus, as far as I can see, but nor does anybody else. And I think Neil is probably more familiar than I am with his work with Andrew Little and David Cunliffe, in what that means for a party. And it just means at the moment that he doesn't have authority over his people, and he doesn't come across as authoritative as a result, and it just is getting, you know, worse and worse for him. That's a matter that National is not going to want to resolve today via Zoom or Skype. But they have to recognise that they're in a situation where they cannot win an election. I don't think with this leader, the election campaign, I think, would be a fiasco with this leader, and some big decisions are ahead for that caucus, and none of them seem at this point up to facing the magnitude of that decision.
Neil.
Yeah, I mean, there have been murmurings about Bridges' leadership for a while, and certainly the last couple of weeks after that, particularly after that ill-advised outburst on Facebook last week, it's come to a head. I think last night was interesting when we had that leak of that angry Nick Smith letter to Bridges, which by itself is not that relevant. I mean, Nick Smith's not the most measured politician at the best of times, but the fact that Smith chose to CC the entire caucus and then several members of the caucus immediately leaked the details of the email to a journalist, you know, that suggests that's concrete evidence that there is deliberate undermining of the leadership going on. And I mean, I worked for Labour through some of the troubles in opposition, and I know exactly how this plays out and how destructive it is. Internal trust breaks down. You get a toxic environment internally. You can't get anything done. The voters hate it. They stop listening to you. And the timing just couldn't be worse. I mean, no party in opposition wants to be tearing themselves apart, particularly at a time when the government is actually looking reasonably competent during a time of national crisis. And this really damaged Labour in opposition. National knows this. They would have wanted to avoid it. But Bridges just can't seem to help himself. And I think for Bridges, it's this relentless negativity of his and his need to kind of politicise everything. And during good times, you know, you can kind of get away with that. But I think it's entirely the wrong tone for the times we're in. And he just can't seem to help himself.
Can we talk about that word? Sorry, go ahead, Neil.
Sorry. So what happens is those National MPs will be, you know, the ones who have shown up to Wellington, I understand there's a few of them, will be looking around the caucus room today and others on their Zoom call, and they'll be asking themselves, is this the guy to pull us out of the hole, or is he going to keep on digging, and am I going to lose my seat, or is the person next to me going to lose their seat? And I think the evidence suggests he's going to keep on digging, which is where they've got their dilemma.
The word politicised, can we sort of just explore that for a minute? Because others turn around and say, hang on, he's got to ask these questions. Yes, of course you have to ask the questions. My God, I've got lists miles long and I'm struggling to get people on to answer them. This has seen a remarkable suspension of our democratic institutions, and I, for one, am delighted to see at least question time coming back. Yes. But the politicising isn't raising the issues. It's the way, and it's hard to explain that.
It's the tone. And you raised the example of Paul Goldsmith, who I think has been absolutely flawless through this whole thing. He has managed to, I mean, I don't share his politics, but, you know, he has raised some very legitimate issues around small business support. And he has raised them in a way that makes people think this guy's actually on our side. He's in tune with the national effort to counter this. He wants what's best for New Zealand, and he's raising legitimate concerns. The problem Bridges has is he just sounded like he was carping, like he was trying to undermine and create politics for the sake of it. And it made people look at him and think, this guy isn't trying to help here. He's just trying to undermine and be negative for his own political interests. And I think that's where it lies. Is it about the nation's interest or is it about your own interest? And I think that's where Bridges has got the tone wrong.
Go ahead.
Oh, I don't know what the National Party's policy on the lockdown is as of this moment. I thought a week ago that National's policy was that the Prime Minister was wrong and should have made a decision to leave the level four as was scheduled a week ago. And this morning I hear Michael Woodhouse, and I don't quite know what he's trying to say because it's not coherent, but he seems to be, to me, saying, oh, actually we should have stayed in level four because we don't have the sufficient tracing. Now, that is partly Michael Woodhouse's fault, but it also is a systemic fault within the National Party and its leadership and its senior staff. You know, they need to decide, what do we think about this issue? Express that point of view, but obviously in the context of acknowledging all these, you know, decisions are very, very difficult. But, you know, to, in the space of a week, to not be able to know what National thinks about the lockdown is ridiculous and suggests that there's going to need to be a significant change.
By September, of course, there may be a very different mood than there is in the country right now. A lot of people hurting. Things may have gone wrong one way or another. And would it be the time for an attack dog then? Would it be the time for someone to say relentlessly, these were mistakes or missteps? In other words, if he can fight, and he is a fighter, could he prove himself to be the right person for the job come the election?
What his supporters are saying, his remaining supporters are saying, is that the government is profoundly incompetent, except for the finance minister and the prime minister, obviously, and the pseudo health minister, Ashley Bloomfield. Sorry to bring him into the politics, but he's been in front of the public, and the government at the moment looks extremely competent. But what Bridges believes and his supporters believe is that by September, Phil Twyford will be to the fore again. The Greens will be going on about some, you know, left-wing ideas that aren't appealing to the median voter. The New Zealand First Party will be asserting itself. The government will look as if it's a shambles. And therefore, Bridges will just win the election by default, essentially. And I think that with a leader that the public had confidence in, was a good manager, had some commercial experience, seemed to be level-headed, possibly that political strategy could work. But when you have somebody who constantly goes on the attack, is constantly talking about the past, not the future, and can't even keep a coherent thought together for a week over something as fundamental as whether the National Party supports the lockdown or not, I don't think even Phil Twyford can win this election for National.
Last word to you, Neil.
I think the question National has to ask itself is, what's their path to victory and who's best placed to lead them there? And I think, assuming the health response continues to work, then by September, the big issue is the economy. And it's likely unemployment's into double digits, businesses are falling over. And if I was National, I'd be running the angle, look, the government did a fine job with the health response. You just hug them on that, take the politics out of it, and campaign hard on which party is best placed to lead the economic recovery. And I think, correct, you know, in spite of historical evidence, National is trusted by voters overwhelmingly on the economy, and that is the angle you would run. The problem Bridges has, he's politicised the health response, and he's made such a turkey of himself that no one trusts him to run a tuck shop, let alone the economy. So I think you want a leader. You might not get a John Key, but you might get a Bill English. You want a leader who has business experience, who is trusted and has some gravitas, and that's where I think Todd Muller probably comes in.
Interesting stuff. I think, as you pointed out, Matthew, or someone has in an article, he's very highly regarded as an operator, but very low profile, Todd Muller. So it'll be interesting to see whether the undermining continues or whether it's in public anyway, goes into some kind of an abeyance. Hey, thanks both of you very much. Matthew Hooton and Neil Jones, our political commentators.